Chapter 77. It was Monroe on the phone, and he wanted to tell me he had had a cup of coffee. Or more specifically, he wanted to tell me he had talked to the steward who had brought him the cup of coffee. The conversation had been on the subject of the day's upcoming festivities, and Monroe said the stewards expected to be very busy until after dinner, but no later than that, because the mess bar would be deserted all evening, because the last time the senator visited, he had hosted everybody in town at Brannan's bar, because, politically, it seemed more authentic, and no doubt the old guy would do the same thing again. "Okay," I said, "that's good. Riley will come to me after all, and his father. What time will dinner finish?"
"Scheduled to be over by 8 o'clock, according to the steward."
"Okay," I said again. "I'm sure father and son will leave the base together. I want you on them from the moment they drive through the gate, but unobtrusively. Can you do that?"
"Could you?"
"Probably."
"Then what makes you doubt I could?"
"Innate skepticism, I suppose," I said. "But whatever. Keep your ear to the ground until 8 tonight, and use this phone number as a contact if you need me. I'll be in and out of this diner all day long."
"Okay," Monroe said. "I'll see you later. But whether or not you'll see me is a different question altogether."
I hung up with Monroe, and I asked the waitress to answer the phone for me if it rang again. I asked her to write down the caller's names on her order pad. Then it was all about waiting. For information, and for face-to-face encounters, and for decisive conclusions. I stepped out to the main street sidewalk and stood in the sun. Across the street, the guy from the shirt store was doing the same thing, taking a break and tasting the air. On my left, two old guys were on a bench outside the pharmacy. Four hands piled on two canes between two sets of knees. Apart from the four of us, the town was deserted. No hustle, no bustle, no traffic, all quiet. Until the goon squad from Kellum showed up. There were four of them in total. They were Kellum's own local version of Senate liaison, I guessed, preparing the ground the same way a Secret Service advance team prepares the ground ahead of a presidential visit. They came out of the mouth of the alley beyond the two old guys on the bench. I guessed they had just called on the Brannan brothers and alerted them to what was going to happen that night. Maybe they had made invoicing arrangements, in which case I wished the Brannan brothers the very best of luck. I imagined billing a Senate office was a long and frustrating experience. The four guys were all officers, two lieutenants, a captain, and a light colonel in the lead. He was 50-ish and fat. He was the kind of soft staff officer who looks ludicrous in battle dress uniform, like a civilian at a fancy dress party. He stopped on the sidewalk and put his knuckles on his hips. He looked all around. He saw me. I was in battle dress uniform, too. On the face of it, I was one of his. He spoke over his shoulder to a lieutenant behind him. Too far to hear his voice, but I could read his lips. He said, "Tell that man to get his ass over here double quick." I guessed he would want to know why I wasn't back on the base, getting myself ready for 100% participation in the hoopla. The lieutenant's eyesight was not as good as mine. He approached most of the way full of one kind of body language, which changed fast when he got close enough to read my rank insignia. He stopped a respectful 4 feet away and saluted and said,
"Sir, the colonel would like a word with you."
Normally, I treat lieutenants well. I was one myself not so very long ago. But right then, I wasn't in the mood for nonsense. So I just nodded and said, "Okay, kid, tell him to step right up." The kid said,
"Sir, I think he would prefer it if you went to him."
You must be confusing me with someone who gives a shit what he prefers.
The kid went a little pale and blinked twice and about turned and headed back. He must have spent the walk time translating my response into acceptable terms, because there was no instant explosion. Instead, the colonel paused a beat and then set off waddling in my direction. He stopped 3 feet away, and I saluted him very smartly, just to keep him confused. He returned the salute and asked,
"Do I know you, Major?"
I said, "That depends on how much trouble you've been in, Colonel. Have you ever been arrested?" He said,
"You're the other MP. You're Major Monroe's opposite number."
"Or he's mine," I said. "Either way, I'm sure we both hope you have a great day."
"Why are you still here?"
"Why wouldn't I be? I was told all issues had been resolved." "The issues will be resolved when I say they are. That's the nature of police work."
"When did you last get orders?"
"Some days ago," I said. "They came from Colonel John James Fraser at the Pentagon, I believe."
"He died."
"I'm sure his successor will have new orders for me in due course."
"It could take weeks to install a successor."
"And I guess I'm stuck here." Silence. Then the fat guy said,
"Well, stay out of sight tonight, understand? The senator must not see a CID presence here. There are to be no reminders of recent suspicions, none at all. Is that clear?"
I said, "Request noted."
"It's more than a request."
"Next up from a request is an order. But you're not in my chain of command."
The guy rehearsed a reply, but in the end he didn't come out with anything. He just turned on his heel and waddled back to his pals. And at that point I heard the phone ring inside the diner, very faintly through the door, and I beat the waitress to it by a step.